Hello, this is Brian Wappler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars and amps and effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions, keyword interesting. Joining me today is Blake Weiland from the Guitar Center podcast called The Tone Mob. You probably know him by now. He's only been on here for about 250 episodes. How you doing, Blake?
Oh, I'm splendid.
Talk about a day, you know?
Yeah.
It's, for those who are listening, we had a time and a half trying to get this scenario working. We were trying to get our microphones to both put out sound and the headphones to receive said sound, and it wasn't working so well. So
yeah, we've only done this, like you said, 250 times, 100 plus of which were using the exact same setup that we're using now, and today it just decided, I'm going to give you problems.
That's the way it goes. So there's, believe it or not, everyone, today is one of those days that there are a lot of topics to talk about. So I don't know about how much interesting off-topic conversations we'll have. I don't know. I'm sure we'll work it in, though.
Oh, we'll get it in there. Don't you worry.
I think the big key thing today is the announcement that Reverb have increased fees from 3.5% to 5%, and the internet is breaking down. It's breaking.
Yes. Breaking, just melting down over it, just melting down. Yeah. It's,
I find it interesting that eBay is 3.5%. I thought it was it's 10, like pretty much across everything else, but I guess musical instruments is 3.5. So now eBay is cheaper. Amazon, it's like a fluctuating range. So anywhere from like 6 to 25%. And average fee is around 13%, all things considered. Now, keep in mind, that doesn't like include sales tax. It doesn't include shipping, of course, or there's other fees associated with it. So we're just talking about the selling fees.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, there was a thread on the Wampler Tone group on Facebook today that someone had mentioned that, you know, is a lot more expensive with the different taxes and other costs that you have in any sort of transaction. And while I understand, yes, there are hard costs there, it's not really associated with the cost that Reverb is charging the seller, right? Because sales tax is sales tax. Reverb's not, you know, they don't get a cut of the sales tax. You know what I mean?
No. And I am here to tell you that implementing that sales tax on a web platform, I didn't have to do it, fortunately, but I heard all about it from my buddy Scott over at Stringjoy. It is a nightmare, like, because every state has different rules and different things that apply and different forms you got to file and different people you got to call to figure out where your forms went, and then you got to do that for all however many states, 42 states or whatever it is that charge sales tax. Yeah, the state, I know it goes to the state level, and it's a complete nightmare to get set up for anyone doing e-commerce stuff. It's really crazy. But no, it's not Reverb that is selling this, or that is charging that tax. They were required to charge that tax because of a Supreme Court case. It was a Wayfair versus somebody in the state of Oklahoma, or versus the state of Oklahoma, maybe. I can't remember exactly, but it was a case that decided, yes, online retailers and sellers have to pay sales tax. And yeah, that's why that's there.
Yeah, it definitely does not make having a website with a shopping cart, it doesn't make it that easy. And it is one of those things that it makes selling through Reverb or eBay or whatever, it kind of, I don't know, cleans up some of that mess, because you don't have to really worry about that sort of thing that much. Mm-hmm. But it does have some more costs associated with it, because you're getting a benefit.
Yeah. So the actual increase as a percentage is pretty high. I think it's like 40-something%.
Yeah, like 43%. I mean, yeah. But again, we're going from 3.5 to 5. So on $100, on $100, they're getting $5 versus 3.5. So it's not, right. It sounds like a lot more when you look at the percentages, but it's not a huge dramatic thing unless you're selling like $1,000 amp, you know, it gets a little bit more that way. Or if you have a Dumble that you're trying to sell, that's something to take into consideration.
Right, right. But I think you're going to run into that problem anywhere. It's not like the auction house you're selling your Dumble at is going to not take a cut.
Right. Yeah, I don't see too many Dumbles for sale on Craigslist.
No, not generally. So I understand why people are frustrated. You know, they've gotten used to this stuff and, you know, they've rolled out the taxes and they've, you know, done all these different things. I understand why it's frustrating for, especially for people who have been longtime customers on there. But the reality is, if you look at, there's an, I think an SEC filing from 2018, which is a couple years ago, Reverb was bleeding money like crazy. They weren't making any money.
Yeah. Like, I think I saw like in 2018, it was like down, they were down $9 million, I think.
Something like that. And that's kind of the model that these tech companies follow, which is unfortunate because it's really difficult. It's really challenging. That's why you don't see new platforms popping up and taking over everywhere, because it's extremely difficult to do. So like Facebook, for example, didn't make money for a very long time, a very long time. And that's kind of what these tech companies do. They get investment, they bleed cash to acquire a user base. And then once they have that user base, they then try to figure out ways to become profitable. It's kind of weird, but that's generally how they work. And, you know, Reverb is still, you know, eBay is a little bit lower right now, but my hypothesis is that they will come up to meet Reverb, because I think they went down to 3.5 on musical instruments because Reverb was at 3.5 and they could afford to.
Right. I think they were at the 10%, or they were at a higher percentage, I know for sure. And they came down to compete with Reverb.
Yeah. Which they probably were like, well, we can't really make money at this, and they probably can't either. Maybe we'll just wait it out until they, you know, go out of business. And well, that didn't really happen, obviously. But
not yeah, quite.
So I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to say that it doesn't suck that they've done this, but I also understand why they did do this, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business, right? And they are providing a benefit for users and sellers in such a way that it, you know, like we talked about, it clarifies a lot of the processes and a lot of the fees associated with selling online. Now, you can still use Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or whatever. That's still a possibility, but you don't have some of the benefits of going through a platform like Reverb or eBay or something along those lines. Or Etsy, I guess. I mean, people sell pedals on Etsy, just not nearly as much.
Yeah, and you lose, if you do go that route, which is a perfectly fine route to go. I've sold stuff on marketplaces and bought stuff on Marketplace. But you lose that protection. So for example, I know someone who bought a rather expensive printer recently on eBay. It was, you know, I don't remember, $2,000 or something. I can't remember what
it was. Wow, that's a printer.
Yeah, it was a beastie printer. It showed up and it wasn't working. It was packed poorly. It just wasn't working. And so, still within the seller's window, shipped it back to the seller. The seller was a psychopath and claimed that this is not the printer I sent you. You used all the ink in the cartridge that I sent and then put the empty cartridge in and sent it back. And like I scratched some hidden marks on the printer I sent you, and this one does not have those marks. And you shipped it in a poorly packed box and all this stuff. And it's like, I shipped it in the same box that you shipped it in with extra packing material. And no, I don't have one of these random printers sitting around to use up your ink and then send it back. It was really like a crazy conspiracy thing. And eBay had to get involved. And eBay, you know, managed to come to a solution that satisfied both parties, which basically meant that eBay ate the money for it just so that guy wouldn't go off the rails and shoot somebody.
Wow. You know?
So those are the kinds of things that those platforms have to deal with, and that they they assume the risk of in a lot of ways. Now, it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes they don't rule in a way that everyone's happy, but they largely do the best they can. And that is something you lose when you go person to person, you know, Craigslist, Facebook, et cetera.
Yeah, very true. Another thing that, I mean, if you're not in the business, you probably don't even think along these terms, but another thing that us as a manufacturer, so what I think about in a situation such as this, I think that a retailer that normally sells on Reverb is now getting a portion of their profits taken. And so generally when that happens, they basically come back to the manufacturer and say, we need a better price, which means that not always, but sometimes the manufacturer now says, well, now these $169 pedals are now going to be $179 because it's costing us more to manufacture. So all those little fees like that kind of add up to that final cost at the end of the day. And it's not really like a direct hard cost, like, oh, 5% on each pedal is exactly, you know, $7.234, you know. It's not that binary necessarily, but it does add up to a real cost at the end of the day. And it's along with inflation and the cost of parts and labor and everything that goes into building a pedal, that, like, to me as a manufacturer, that's something that actually concerns me quite a bit, is seeing those fees go up. Because you know eBay is going to go up. You know it is.
It almost guaranteed, right?
Right. I mean, Amazon isn't that profitable for a lot of companies to sell on. I mean, you hear a lot of people talk about how they do $100,000 a month selling on Amazon. They're telling you how much in sales they're getting. They're not telling you how much of that is, at the end of the day, their profit or how much they're able to keep. And, you know, there's a lot of things about Amazon I'm not really a big fan of. But to a buyer, it is a pretty clean process. I like that about it. But I'm just not a big fan of selling direct myself through functions like that. I'm just not a fan of it.
Amazon is, you hit the nail right on the head. Like, and I know we have people that listen to this that are kind of entrepreneurial minded. So I'm sure they've seen courses and hucksters and people be like, yeah, well, in only 3 months, we were doing six figures on Amazon and I'll teach you how to do it too. Well, there's a reason they're selling you a course. It's because their six-figure Amazon business isn't really netting them all that much at the end of the day. Because it can work, but it's a very you have to be really good at it, and it's almost like its own specialized thing. So don't let like the guy selling the six-figure course, you know, shill you into thinking that you're going to be just rolling in money by following his program. It's a hard way to make money.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I saw. So I'm a member of a few groups about selling on Amazon, and I saw a thread pop up today where no names mentioned, but there are people that they offer, I guess you could call it consulting, kind of like coaching. And it's a service for teaching others how to sell on Amazon. And they charge like $20,000 or $30,000.
Whoa.
For I'm like, why would you ever pay that much? Like, that's crazy, unless you knew you were getting a gigantic return. So anyways, I would rather, I would much.
Wow.
Yeah. I would much rather, you know, work with guitar pedals and guitars and amplifiers. Speaking of, I got a new amplifier. And, you know, ooh, enjoy life a little bit more than trying to figure out how I'm going to sell 10,000 bottles of ketchup this week, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel that for sure. Now, I'm not trying to hate on anybody that's doing it successfully, because I know that there are people doing it successfully. I'm just saying, not for me. Not for me.
Yeah.
But me speaking of Amazon, this is actually a nice segue.
So apparently, you brought this to my attention, Blake. Amazon, in Canada at least, now has, what do they call it, their basic? Is that their product line? The Amazon Basic pedals. Literally, a pedal made by, well, with Amazon's name on it, that you can find on the Canadian version of Amazon. And yeah, it looks dramatically a lot like the Coco distortion. I mean, like exactly like the Coco distortion. So I'm assuming there's probably an OEM thing. I don't know, but it looks like it could be. They look a lot alike. They're both called distortion, and the controls seem to be in the same exact places, that sort of thing. Same color, pretty much. But it was
same font on the controls.
Yeah, same font. Yeah. But the interesting thing to me, and really when Blake and I were talking, were that Amazon decided to get into guitar pedals.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about this, like, we were going, wow, I can't believe that they saw that as a thing that was worth their time. Well, I guess they have the data. They have all the data. So they probably know, like, all right, we got Wampler and Walrus and these guys over here, and they sell okay. But what really sells is these cheap little $25 Chinese distortion boxes. So that's what we're going to do. That I have to assume that's what caused that decision. But also, since it is just in Canada, I feel like they're probably just kind of testing the waters.
That's what it looks like. It looks like a test, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. We'll see if we can sell this Amazon Basics distortion. And, you know, they probably will.
So I have, there's a product called Scope that apparently I have to log into, and I don't remember my password. Let's see if I know my password. Okay, it looks like I do. There's a product called Scope that if you use that extension on a Chrome browser, it tells you roughly how many units are sold of different products. Okay, this is just a tool that people that sell on Amazon can use. And now it wants to show me a video, and there's no X. Oh my gosh. Okay. I can't stand that whenever you can't get out of an advertisement. Anyways.
Oh, man.
So I'm looking. So like I just typed in Donner guitar pedals, because I know they're a popular one. So I can see right here with this that for the Donner Blues Drive, according to Scope, they sell roughly 148 pedals a month or so. That's, you know, not bad. Pretty good amount of pedals. But the reason why I even bring this up is you can kind of see, well, how popular are guitar pedals on Amazon? So let's, I don't know. Let me bring up a brand I happen to be very familiar with and see how many of these sell, according to Scope, through the Wampler or Wampler brand. Let's see.
Oh, you know that brand?
I've heard of it before. I don't know them directly, but I've heard of them. And again, the same advertisement. Jeez, AMC Scout, go away. okay, so it looks like the Wampler Tumnus is the first one that came up whenever I typed in just Wampler guitar pedals. And it says an estimated 46 sales this month. Just by comparison. So let me just type in guitar pedals. That will tell me, just because of the algorithm, it kind of tells you which are the ones that are the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
On Amazon. So let's see. Amazon's choice is the Kaleen. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so. That sounds right.
Kaleen Digital Overdrive Effect Pedal. Okay, seriously, AMZ Scout, you've got to stop putting this ad in front of my face every 30 seconds. So let's see. The AMZ. Oh, I'm sorry, not AMZ. The Kaleen Where is it at? Okay, looks like
AMZ is getting subliminal on you. Oh. You're starting to talk about it. I'm very curious to know. I know this is probably really boring to a lot of people, but I want to know what the Kaleen Digital Distortion is selling.
Kaleen Digital Overdrive guitar pedal shows 86 sales for the month. That's what it shows. By comparison, the DS1 shows 462 sales for this month. Again, using the software called Scope, that's all I'm using. I'm sure there's some are accurate, some are probably not accurate. I don't know. I can tell you this from looking at our particular sales. I know they're close-ish, but they're definitely not always right on. And there's times that they're way off.
Would you say they're within like 15 to 20% usually, or how far off are you talking on a normal basis?
Normally, when I look at it, I would say they're probably 15% or so. But they're like, for example, I have that DIY book. Let me just actually type that in. I'm curious. Last time I checked it, I'm like, I'm not selling that much. Nope.
And if I am, where's my money?
No kidding. Like someone needs to write me a check with some more zeros at the end. 27 sales a month. That's probably a little high. I don't have that browser open, but I'm going to guess 15 is probably a more accurate.
Okay.
So. Not crazy.
I was going to say on the Boss DS1, that sounds a little low, right? For it being a Boss DS1, you'd think the volume on that would be like crazy because there's used ones and blah, 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 blah. Like,
right.
I would think that would be almost double what they were saying, but who knows?
I think so, but there's also a disadvantage that I've never worked at a music store. And these aren't conversations that you generally have at the music store. Like, hey, by the way, how many of my competitors' pedals are you guys selling?
Right.
that conversation doesn't ever take place. So I really don't have any data to back that up with. But I do know the DS1's incredibly popular. So we know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, I was just thinking about this as we were talking about like Amazon Basics pedals. You know, how many brands have there been, like even like older ones? So like every time I post this, I got this weird old Yamaha distortion. I don't even know how many people know that Yamaha ever made guitar pedals. Like they had guitar pedals in the 80s.
Yeah, man.
So how many brands have gotten in and gotten out over the years that like, it's like, what? I didn't know. Like I got this big pink Peavey chorus, which sounds awesome, by the way.
Yep.
I remember Yep. You know, people don't remember all those weird odds and ends that have popped up over the years. And
Peavey had several really cool pedals for a while. I can see one in my head, but I can't remember the name of it. But it had this big rubber piece over the switch.
Yep.
And it looked kind of funky, but it was a pretty cool distortion, as I recall.
That is my chorus is from that same series. It's like it reminds me of a Reebok like pump 'em up shoe from the
90s. Yes, it looks just like that. Yeah. Absolutely.
The stereo chorus is brilliant. It sounds awesome. It looks weird, but man, it sounds good.
Yeah, it's been a while since I had this. I wonder, does Peavey even still make guitar pedals?
I don't think so. That's why I brought it up. I don't think they have any guitar pedals at all.
I haven't seen any. Yeah, I wonder why they don't make guitar pedals. I need to talk to Hartley. See if we can work out a deal here.
You know, it seems weird that they
design you some pedals, Hartley.
Right? You would think they have all these amps that, like, well, I mean, obviously the 6150 is, or I can't get that number straight. The former Eddie Van Halen amp that they make,
right? The amp formerly known as the 5150.
Yes, exactly. Like, you know, put one of those in a box. It seems like a logical sell, right? Maybe they've done it before. I don't know.
MXR did.
Oh, that's right. MXR did it.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm,
but I think the EVH brand, I mean, I don't know exactly how that deal worked, but I'm assuming they just kind of partnered up with MXR and created that pedal under their brand name.
Makes some sense. Yeah. But yeah, it is kind of surprising that PV doesn't get into pedals in some form or fashion. Or maybe they have, and I just don't know. That's very possible.
I I was looking through Reverb trying to find something, and there's really not. Yeah, it looks like there's nothing current at all. But I mean, you could find a few of those, the pedals that we're mentioning. I think one's called the Hot Foot. There's a delay they have, and a reverb.
Really?
Which surprised me. Yeah. And I didn't know they were doing a lot of digital stuff back then, which, I mean, makes sense, but I don't recall those. Interesting. 6505. That's the one that used to be the 5150, right?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
No, I always wondered, and this is just my ignorance, why 6505? I know, I understand the 5150 thing, but what's the significance of the number 6505?
I have literally no idea. I'm guessing maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's their address or something. I have no clue why they chose 6505.
That's a good point. It might be their address. It's the last four digits of Hartley's phone number.
So, of its social security number. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a social security number. There you go.
Just have to guess the remaining digits, and the keys to the PV Kingdom are yours.
I have no idea on that one.
I kind of wonder what's going on with PV in general, because like, I think they closed out their U.S. manufacturing here in the last year or two, I believe. I can't remember where I saw that at. Don't quote me on that. I might be speaking incorrectly, but I'm pretty sure they did. But I don't know. They had a lot of employees, so that would kind of surprise me.
Yeah, I haven't really followed it, to be honest. I mean, back in the day, I mean, and really still, I love the PV Classic stuff. Great sounding amps, especially, I mean, my favorite thing to do is with those classic 50s is throw some greenbacks in there. Man, mm-hmm. It just sounds so good. It's such a cool circuit. And it is fairly unique-ish. Like, it's not really a Bassman. It's not really a Marshall-y thing. It kind of is, but not really. I mean, it's fairly unique. I mean, as unique as tubes are going to be. I mean, tubes work the way tubes do.
Right.
But it's not a straight up clone of anything that I know of, but it's, it's just such a cool circuit with some greenbacks in there.
They're cool amps. I played the Classic 30 and the Classic 50, and I think they sound really nice, and you can get them for reasonable money, which is always a good thing.
Actually, you know, come to think of it, my first tube amp, I want to make sure I get this right. Yes. My first tube amp I ever had was a Delta Blues in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Look at that. And now look where it brought you today.
I know, right?
Who would have thunk it?
Great amp. The only thing I didn't like about the Delta Blues, I don't like a 15 in a guitar amp. It was too woofy on the bottom. It was just too burly, I guess is a good word for it. Didn't like a 15 in it. But 212s and a Classic 50 package, it's great. The Classic 30 is cool. I like it, but I really like the wattage of the 50. It just has a little bit more bottom end. Even if you do run it to a 112 cabinet, I still kind of prefer it.
You just mentioned something. I don't think I've ever played guitar through a 15-inch speaker. I haven't done it and knew that I was doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one I think I ever have. But to be fair, I've also really never wanted to. Like, and it's really based around my experiences with that Delta Blues.
I take it back. I think I have, if I'm remembering all the specs correctly, which is kind of a funny, weird first amp story. So my first tube amp was a Fender 75, which I still have. And I was pairing it with this really cheap Marshall, I think MG cab, you know, like it was like the lowest cost 412 that you could get. Right. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't sound all that good. And then I went to my local store here, Old Town Music, and they had a Fender 75 combo that I believe had a single 15 inch speaker in it. And I played that and I was like, oh, this sounds way better. And that led me on my quest to find a better speaker cab for that amp. And yeah, weird first amp stories. Now I found a nice Marshall 212 slant. So it's like diagonal. It looks like a small 412, but it's actually a 212. And I still use it to this day. I love that cab. It sounds so good.
A Fender 75. I don't think I've ever played through one of those.
They're really weird. Huh. I think they're some of the last of the hand-wired Fender amps. And they were made, from what I gather, to be like a boogie competitor. They're channel switching. The problem with them, in my experience, is stock. It's really hard to get. So you can get a great, you know, heavy drive sound out of it. Or you can get a really nice clean sound out of it. But it's almost impossible to channel change between the two. Like how it's designed. It's designed so that you can stomp on a switch and get into your dirt channel. But I could never get the settings set to where it sounded good both ways until I took it to Mr. Chris Benson of Benson Amps before he was Chris Benson of Benson Amps and had him do some mods to it. And now it works great for that. But it's the stock, I really struggled with getting them to sound how I wanted it to sound in and be able to channel switch. But man, it's great for those classic Fender cleans, and it is loud. Oh, it's so loud. It's 75 watts all tube with ultra linear transformers, and I've shaken pictures off the wall with it on more than one occasion.
those are always fun. I know I have a twin reverb that's pretty freaking loud, and you can't really be in the same county as that amp when every epic crank.
Oh, I forgot to mention something about the 75. It what drew me to it initially was that it's switchable to 15 watts. It's still extremely loud at 15 watts, but obviously less so than at 75. But they're cool, and you can pick them up for not that much money. If you're looking for like classic Fender clean tone and you don't care about the channel switching, you can get them for pretty reasonable, and I really like mine. So there you go. Speaking of amps, I thought you had an amp.
Yeah. I do have an amp. Yes. Yeah, so today I just got it. I just got a Sedano SLO-30.
Oh, No, you didn't.
I did. I pulled it out of the box. I have not had a chance to play it yet. And Rich Oliver, who was on the podcast with us last week, I told him I had it. He said, "How does it sound?" I said, "It sounds fantastic." I said, "What? I haven't actually played it yet, but I know it sounds fantastic." I'm a little bit giddy today because I'm sitting here staring at it going, man, I want all the stuff that I got to get down. I just want it to be done so I can just go over there and jam out some docking tunes.
Oh, man. Oh, absolutely. That is a good new amp day. Oh, the 30 has me very curious. Like the 100 is a little more than I would need, but I'm really curious about that 30.
Yeah, me too. I've heard great things about it, and you know, knowing everyone kind of involved with Sedano doesn't hurt.
Right.
So I know a little bit of the inner workings of it. And I'm just, you know, I don't know. I'm super excited to play it. I know it's going to sound good. I know it is. I know what went into making it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's going to be a killer, killer, killer amp. So I'm super excited for today's new amp day. My plan is to do a YouTube video on it. So I'll do a video on it and give everyone an update. Not next week, because next week I'm on vacation.
So, vacation? Mm-hmm. What?
Vacation. Yeah, that's one of those things where you don't stay home and you don't work and you just go somewhere else. That's what I'm doing.
Well, color me jealous. I hadn't one of those in a while.
I haven't either. That's why I'm quite hyped for it. So believe it or not, we're going to Florida, which right now during the coronavirus, era, I like to call it, generally isn't too good of an idea, but it just so happens that I have a friend, a very good friend who has a condo there, and he's not using it right now. And he said, "Hey, you guys want to take a break for a bit?" And I said, "Sure. We'll keep that condo in good working order for you." So it's kind of a special deal. It's on its own little private beach and everything. So.
Oh, well, that ain't a bad way to quarantine.
Yeah. So if you happen to be, on the Gulf and you see some weird guy who has a laptop on the beach, good chance that's me.
I thought you weren't going to be working.
I didn't say that.
Oh, you didn't say that. Okay. Actually, you did. No. You said you were going to not work. You did.
That's not true. Anything can be edited, Blake. I can go back and erase that from the conversation. I'm kidding you. I am going to work a little bit, but I'm not going to be doing any podcasts or videos or anything like that. Just basically just answering some emails and kind of upkeep in the general place, you know?
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
Because the last thing you want after a week's of vacation is to come back to 700 emails. That's just soul crushing. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. One of these days, I'm going to do what I've said I'm going to do for years, and that is I'm going to venture into the woods for at least a week with no electronic communications, no social media, no emails, and I'm really looking forward to that. But that part that you're talking about, I'm not looking forward to.
You know, I've always kind of romanticized walking the Appalachian Trail. It's taken like 6 months. I mean, I couldn't do it, but it'd be, in a way, it'd be awesome. In another way, I'd probably would be just a bumbling idiot. What's this? Oh, wait, that stings.
You know, can I drink this water?
Right. Look, it's water. Don't drink that. That'd be fine.
Is that a bear? Come here. Let's go see if that's a bear.
Right. Here, got some food for you, Mr. Bear. Yeah. I tend to kind of over romanticize things like that, though. I watch stuff on YouTube and I'm like, oh, that'd be so wild. Just taking 6 months off from the world and just walking the Appalachian Trail. Be fantastic.
I think, but I heard a story. This is not exactly related, but there was a couple who went to a remote island or somewhere where they were disconnected, or they were sailing. Maybe they were sailing. I can't remember, but they were disconnected from the internet right at the start of the pandemic. And then they got back home and they were like, what in the world is going on right now? Cause they were gone for like months. So it's like, man, that would be a shell shock type of situation.
That would be a big shock.
You'd think somebody was joking. You'd be like, come on. What are you talking about? We all got to stay home. What are you talking about?
Yeah, man. It's, who would have ever predicted the things that are happening would have happened? It's just unbelievable.
The deep state probably predicted it. Sorry.
Well, you know why this is happening? Because the world needs more SLO 30s.
Oh, you're right. That's why
what the problem is.
That'll cure it. Mm-hmm. That'll cure that the coronavirus.
In a way it will, because if you get one, you'll do nothing but sit inside and play.
Yes, I agree.
It's the best way to quarantine is an SLO 30 and a big 412 cabinet and just crank the crap out of it. You know?
That's what the world needs, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up there for this week. You got anything else you want to add, Blake, before we do the outs here?
Let me see. Well, I guess I probably would be remiss if I didn't mention they're almost gone, but I did a project with Fuzzrocious Pedals called the Typhon, and we just released the V2 of it, and they're almost gone. I don't know if there will be any available by the time this episode drops or not, but if you go to tonemob.com/store, you can check it out. It's a clean boost, preamp, fuzz, distortion, overdrive, whatever you need it to be, it can probably do it. It's pretty, pretty wild. So check it out. If there's any available, snatch one up, because I don't think we're going to be making them again. At least we don't have plans to as of right now. So there you go.
So that's tonemob.com/store then.
Yes.
Right? All right. Make sure we'll put that in the notes here. So thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email me at podcast@wamplerpedals.com. I'll personally get your email. If you want to email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com. and that goes directly to him. If you like to, if you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, and others into guitar podcasts. If you'd like to show your support for the show, that's the best way to do it. And also, make sure you check out tomob.com/store to get the Fuzzrocious pedal, right?
Yeah.
And maybe hit up womplipedals.com right after you buy that pedal. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.